This podcast delves into the dark, the depraved, and all things to keep you up at night. Listener discretion is advised. Now, sit back, pull the covers over your head, and allow yourself to be taken on a journey through the abyss.
Hey there, pod people. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Through the Abyss podcast. I'm your co-host, Mandy.
And I am still Ben.
And we are continuing with our part two of our Ed Kemper series.
I didn't look like it. It was getting easier to do. I was getting better at it. I was getting less detectable. I started flaunting that invisibility. Severing a human head, two of them, at night, in front of my mother's residence, with her at home, my neighbors at home upstairs, their picture window open, the curtains open, 11 o'clock at night, the lights are on, all they have to do is walk by, look out, and I've had it.
Why did you keep the heads? Why did you cut them off, and why did you keep them?
Something out of my childhood. I could put it on an incident. I mean, my father chopping the heads off of our two pet chickens and my mother insisting that I eat them for dinner. you know, we could say it was something that simple. I don't think it was. Now, my dad heads out back with a hatchet. I got on my bike and I rode. I tried to stop it. I remember that. I got on the bike, rode around the block. I was crying. I haven't talked about that for a lot of years. I'm sure that may have implemented something. That may have gotten something rolling, but along fantasy lines. But it took a lot of years of development along those lines to really get off.
But how are you able to, in 1 minute, have someone's head in your hand, and very shortly thereafter?
Living through a fantasy, however that would relate to that severed head. And then 5 minutes later, I'd put that away, and there'd be a knock on the door, and I'd put it away and answer the door. And the landlady would be there, and we'd discuss it.
Discuss what?
Reality. Her reality, not mine. Some people go crazy at that point. I felt it. It was one hell of a tweak. I mean, to just flip out and not know where I was. To be walking up the stairs with a camera bag that belonged to a young woman that had her severed head in it. Walking up to my apartment past a happy young couple coming down the stairs who nodded and smiled at me as they went by. Good evening. And they're going out on a date where I'd love to be going. And I'm aware of both of these realities, and the distance between those two is so dramatic, so amazing, so violent, that really, I could feel the wheels squeaking inside. That was really pulling on it. And I imagine at that point some people break. But I didn't literally go insane. I didn't get lost.
What do you think about the chicken story?
It's funny that you said that, because that's what I wanted to talk about, was the chicken story. And that was so long. It's amazing we're on the same page. Because this is the thing. It was in response to a question saying, why do you think you're cutting off the heads, right? So it's like, Well, it could be this chicken. My dad, cut off these chickens, and they made me eat the chicken. And then he's like, but it could be something that simple, but I don't think it is. So basically what happened all in that, to tie it together from my perspective, is he's, number one, again, not taking any responsibility. He's saying it could be my dad's fault, right? And then Number two, he says it could be this elaborate chicken story, but I don't think it is, which means you didn't answer the question. You just blew some smoke and mirrors. You just wasted our time, sir, right? There's a lot of people who grow up on farms and unfortunately have to see animals get their heads twisted and things like that, and they don't become serial killers, right? But again, it's what you're saying about the narcissism. It's like, none of this is my fault. Yep. We could blame my dad, right?
Which is interesting, because he didn't care about those chickens really, because he was torturing and killing animals before then. So
that's a great point too.
Yeah. I mean, that's just an excuse so he doesn't have to take responsibility for anything.
Yeah. He just didn't want to answer the dude's question. So he's like, I mean, we could say it's this, but then even he says, but I don't think it is. Right, he's just like, I'm just not gonna answer your question. I'm gonna tell you this fucked up story about a chicken, and then I'm gonna tell you that it has nothing to do with what you asked me.
Yeah, he's He's good at misdirection. I will give him that. He does it a lot.
Yeah, he's a master manipulator, right?
Oh,
And
absolutely.
the weirdest thing, right? I'm watching the Ted Bundy a thing about like falling in love with a serial
Oh,
killer,
yeah.
whatever it's
It's a
called,
great
right?
documentary,
And
yeah.
they're talking about there was a point where he is supposed to be executed, and he wants to elaborately tell all of the crimes he's committed, right? So that he can buy more time not to get executed and be a benefit to people. And his lawyers are contemplating whether or not it's beneficial to have him do this because his stories are so brutally disturbing and the way Ted presents them is not good. Kemper can tell you he's cutting off someone's head and he's so chill and calm that you almost miss that you should be like emotionally impacted by that. Like, that's how manipulative this dude is.
Yeah, I think he's actually better than Bundy.
For sure. Bundy was so emotional and would get hyper and excited. And you're like, this dude's crazy. Kemper's
He's
got his
straight
shit
up
together.
calm. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what he would be like angry though.
No.
Not sure I would want to see that, but I mean,
No. Whatever his grandma saw at the table before she got killed, like whatever look she
yeah.
recognized, I don't want to know that look.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of right there with you. I mean, honestly, I would go and sit down in the facility that he's in now and have a conversation with him face to
What
face.
facilities is in San Quentin?
No,
Or
he's
is
in Vacaville.
Vacaville?
Vacaville.
That's very close. It's
Yeah, it's
somewhere
close to
like within
you.
30 miles. I mean, you gotta keep in mind, like all of this is like I literally tried to find his apartment. I'm looking at my glasses because I bought these in Alameda where he apparently lived. Berkeley's 15 minutes from here.
Yeah.
Stanford's 35 miles from here. Like
Yeah.
all of these areas, he's killing people. Watsonville, the company I work for, one of our stations is in Watsonville, right? Like. All of these are like right here.
Well, his kill sites are probably close to you too, then, actually.
Yeah, I would imagine. And I had no idea Ed Kemper was from the Bay.
Yeah. I can't believe you really have never heard of this guy. He's
I mean, I've heard of him. I didn't know
notorious.
he was from here.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's in the California medical facility, correctional medical facility, something like that. But it's in Vacaville or Vacaville,
Yeah,
however
I
you
know
say that's up.
Vacaville's within 30 miles of here.
You should go visit him.
Actually, let me look it up. Alameda to Vacaville. I think it's called Vacaville. If I've heard people pronounce it correctly. Oh yeah, I exaggerated. It's not 30 miles. It's 54 miles. So I mean it's
Still,
an hour drive.
I think you should drive up there and say hi to old Ed.
Yeah, like it when it's visiting time, they gotta put you on a list. What I'm gonna
I
do, just
know.
like bang on the prison door and be like, hey, yeah, Ed Kemper, my name's Ben, he knows me.
But seriously, I would just want to sit down and just see. I don't know. I would like to see him in person. I really would. I don't know.
he's
He's
inter he's an
just.
interesting
He
dude.
is. He
Just
is.
because he seems like he'd be
A
someone
big
that you
teddy
would want to
bear.
be friends with,
Yeah.
other than the fact that you know he's this horrific serial killer who probably, like you said, when he's mad, has a side that you don't want to ever see ever, right? Like, so it's this side he's selling to the world is endearing.
You know what though? I don't see him going into a rage like Bundy
I mean,
did.
maybe
I think
not.
he
Maybe
was
he kills
probably,
calm.
I think it was probably more controlled. Because he reminds me of my brother in the fact that my brother is very non-emotional. He's very monotone, very, not excitable. If my brother were to be a serial killer, he would probably kill without rage. Not
Yeah.
that my brother is a serial killer, but I'm just saying
Yeah,
he's
I
got
mean, and
that
like, and again,
personality.
like we've said it in the beginning, but just to put it out there, I mean, obviously, it's good if you have the ability to be in touch with your emotions. Being an emotional person is not a bad thing, but also, if you're someone who isn't super emotional, like, don't worry about yourself. Like, that doesn't mean you're a serial killer. Right? Like, there are people like your brother, and I work with some people that they don't show a lot of emotion, but they're good people,
Yeah,
right?
right, exactly. But he's not done yet, folks. So on the night of February 5th, 1973, Ed and his mom gotten into a fight. He stormed out of the apartment. He was keyed up, he was ready to go. So he picked up Rosalind first and engaged her in a conversation. Short while, he stopped for another hitchhiker named Alice. And she didn't have any trepidation about getting into the car because, Rosalind was already in there and you know, he had that UC Santa Cruz parking sticker on his car, prominently displayed, you know, which I think authorities were promoting the fact that, you know, don't get into somebody's car unless they have some kind of a sticker like that on their car. So the authorities pretty much just pushed these kids into his car. So they rode around for one.
Santa Cruz where his mom taught?
Yeah.
Santa Cruz is very cool, by the way. If you visit, we should go there. Does they have like a carnival like on the beach?
Isn't that like where Lost Boys was like the murder capital of the world in that movie?
Maybe.
Santa Cruz. It's been so long. Something like that. Yeah.
But it's like where they have like Ferris wheels and stuff like that, right? Like on the beach.
Ferris will scare me.
All right. Maybe you won't like Santa Cruz. But it's definitely like a cute, nice little town. Like it's like feels college-y. Like it's, you could see where he would have the cream of the crop pickings in Santa Cruz.
Yeah. Yeah. Which he did. Now he drove him around for a while. This time he didn't even stop the car to do his killing. He got Rosalind's attention, you know, told her to look off from the passenger side. There's some kind of level view or whatever. And as she looked, he slowed down. He drew his 22 and shot her in the head. And then, of course, he quickly pointed the gun back at Alice in the back seat and he fired several times. Rosalind, you know, she was dead the first hit. But Alice didn't die immediately. So he shot her again, pretty much point blank once he got out of town, and that finished her off. So he pulled into a cul-de-sac, put the bodies in the trunk. Now he stopped for gas, went to his mom's house, which, you know, he went in, went back out again. Now once he was outside the apartment, he pulled the car to the street. He opened the trunk and he beheaded the bodies right there on the damn street. So he's got no fear of nothing.
He's got this love for cutting off heads because there's zero reason to kill someone and then cut their head off. But I mean, it's not like he's the only one.
Dahmer's he likes to dissect too, you know. So the next morning he brought Alice's body inside, had sex with it in his room. He also brought in Rosalind's head so he could take the bullet that was lodged in it, just like he'd done with Cindy's. Now he drove away from Santa Cruz to dispose of most of the body parts, then on to Pacifica to get rid of the heads and the hands. So he cut these bitches up. Excuse me. He cut these women up. Sorry, I shouldn't have said that. My bad.
Yeah, I mean, you would think, like, of the two of us, that I would be the one to slip out a sexist comment. But there you go, Mandy.
My bad. Didn't mean it. Just kidding. Now, his mom never seemed to show any kind of suspicion whatsoever that Ed was so depraved as, you know, he actually was. But on Easter weekend, roughly a month after the killings of Rosalind and Alice, this is when he decided it was time for Mama to go bye-bye for good. So he waited all night in his room while Clarnell slept peacefully. He carefully considered, you know, what he was about to do. And at 5:15 a.m., he got a hammer from the kitchen and went to her bedroom. He struck her once really, really hard and then slashed her throat. Within a minute, he'd killed and beheaded her within a minute.
Right. We're like, but he shot everyone till this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can see how personally he hates his mother, right? Like, his hammer all is the
killings
very...
were him killing her, you know, metaphorically.
Yeah. And I could see that too, but you got like, what I'm saying is like, this is like hand to hand. He's getting personal with it. He's not going to shoot.
Oh, well, sure he is. Of course. He's not going to make it easy. He's got all that rage built up for her. So he beheaded her. He actually removed her larynx in the process. He tried to put it down.
That's
the garbage
crazy,
disposal.
Because you know why he's removing her larynx? So she's dead. And he's like, so now she can't talk.
Yeah.
I mean, like, she wasn't going to talk anyway. She's dead. But he's like, I got to get rid of the larynx.
Well, he put it down the garbage disposal.
Oh, Lord.
But the machine spat it back out, which Ed thought it was appropriate and not surprising. Because I guess, you know, to him, she's absolutely toxic. Now, he hid her body in a closet, cleaned up a bit, and he left the house. And that afternoon, trying to decide what he needed to do, and decided that if someone else were found dead with his mom, then the suspicion might point away from him. So he went back to his mom's. He called Sarah Hallett, which was one of his mom's friends, to invite her to dinner. Couldn't get a hold of her immediately. So, you know, kind of freaking out, but she actually ended up calling him back around 5 or something. So he made the invitation, saying that the dinner was a surprise for his mom. Now, when Sarah arrived, he strangled her first manually and then finally with the
So
scarf that he
weird.
had gotten from Iko.
It's so weird to me. I mean, his MO is shooting people, and now he's like, I'm going to hammer mom. I'm going to strangle Sarah.
No, he strangled the first three.
Oh, okay. I thought he was shooting everything.
Stabbed, strangled.
So he does everything. He's
yeah,
just
he's,
killing.
Yeah, he's pretty much whatever.
He's out there killing
willy
nilly.
Yeah, pretty
gotcha.
Much, yeah. So finally, he killed her by strangulation with the scarf that he got from the 15-year-old Iko, the dancer.
Oh, Lord.
He removed Sarah's clothes, put her on his bed, and, you know, he sometime apparently attempted to have sex with her corpse. And I actually...
Attempted? He failed? The corpse
she,
said no?
She was older. I don't know. Maybe it was... I don't even want to go there.
Yeah, let's not go there.
Let's not
but
go
I've
there.
Never heard of someone actually using one of like their souvenirs from a victim on another victim, like strangling her with another victim's scarf is I think that's a new thing for me anyways. I've never heard of that.
I'm trying to think. I'm thinking of TV shows that have done weird stuff like that, but I real life I'm not sure. I mean, people, you know, they use the same type of equipment and stuff, but I
yeah.
don't know. I'll have to look
but
into
it's a
that
scarf,
one.
Right? I mean, if he had like a knife he don't use iron, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But he's using one victim's scarf, so it's
mm-hmm.
like to strangle another one, it's just I've never heard of anything like that.
Maybe it's
A little
just what
bit
he
unique.
Had handy at the time.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, you would think you could even like use like your t-shirt or whatever you're wearing, but whatever.
It was springtime. It was April. And for 2 months I hadn't killed. And I said, it's not going to happen to any more girls. It's got to stay between me and my mother. And it's got to, I can't get away from her. We're still fighting. She's still belittling me. She's still, I'm like a puppet on a string. And I entertain her. She knows all my buttons. And I dance like a puppet with that pain. And it had even gotten physical to where I had physically grabbed her and thrown her onto her bed, trying to emphasize a point that she's threatening to kill her. So here I pick up these two young ladies in Berkeley on Ashby Avenue. One has flowers in her hand, petite little dolls. They're in granny dresses and they're hitchhiking, a couple of real experts. I want to see how together I am, if I can resist this temptation. Get in my car. They want to go one way. I know they need to go the other. If they go the way they're insisting on, we're headed right back out to where the first two co-eds were murdered. And I'm saying to myself, oh my God, all I got to do is relax and they'll take me to their death. I've got the gun in the car, the same one I've been doing it with. I insisted, as gently as I could, I took them where they needed to go, to their college. It was 1 week before I murdered my mother. I said, she's got to die, and I've got to die, or girls like that are going to die. And that's when I decided I'm going to murder my mother. I knew a week before she died, I was going to kill her. And she went out to a party, she got soused, she came home, went to sleep. I was woken up by that, I got, came out. I walked up to her bed. She's laying there reading a paperback, as many thousands of nights before. And she said, oh, I suppose you're going to want to sit up all night and talk now. Shit. I looked at her, I said, no. I said, good night.
Really?
And I knew I was going to kill her. You know? And I'm so
There's
cold,
no tears.
So hard. And that's the first time in 10 years I've looked at it that way. I mean, that intensely, that honestly. It hurts. Because I'm not a lizard. I'm not from under a rock. I came out of her vagina. See? I came out of my mother. And in a rage, I went right back in. For 7 years, she said, I haven't had sex with a man because of you. My murderous son is one of our arguments. I cut off her head and I humiliated her corpse. I said, there. You know? six young women dead because of the way she raises her son and the way her son is raised, the way he grows up. And what's her closing words? I suppose you want to sit up all night and talk. God, I wish I had.
You know, like, he's been talking about killing these girls for so long, and like you said, there's just no emotion.
Yeah.
And now the one person that he hates, right? Like, he's crying. It's like, just shows you, man, like, how messed up his upbringing. Like, all this dude wanted was for his mom to love him. Like, that's all he wanted was, like, not to be passed around from father to mother to grandparent, to actually have lived with his mother growing up and have her actually be attentive and loving. And this dude, unless you, I feel like you're going to say you think his emotions aren't real, but, like,
right.
I think it's completely legit. And I think that it's like this hate he had for her, it's just all this fake thing to cover up the fact that this is just a screaming child wanting his mother to care about him.
I don't dispute that fact. I think he did have hatred toward her because of how he was raised and how she was with him, but I don't think that display of emotion there is real.
But what would be the point of it? He hasn't showed emotion for everyone else he's killed. Why would he need to fake that for this interviewer?
To make people think he's not a total monster, that he's a human being. But I mean, there were no tears whatsoever. There's no distress mark. I feel like
you could see a moist streak under his glasses.
No, that was a vein.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's possible. Yes. Yeah. I mean, and it's possible he made it up. But I just feel like if you've just talked to this guy about killing all these other people and you've showed no tinge of emotion, I don't feel there's any reason to convince him that you feel sad about your mom, because you could easily just be like, my mom was a horrible person. That's why I don't have any emotion, right? Like, he could explain it.
Yeah, but from a human being standpoint, most people would think, you know, you would have some kind of feeling feeling bad about killing your mom. So maybe he's just trying to make people believe that he does feel bad about killing his mom. I don't think he does.
It could be. I don't know.
I just feel like it was fake.
Yeah, I mean, and you could be right. And there's no reason for this guy to want people to love him. But there's also a possibility, like, as a narcissist, he wants everyone to love him.
Oh, he wants everybody to love him. Yeah,
yeah, and you could be right on that. But my thing is just always, like, he's sitting in jail. Like, what's his benefit of showing a tear? There's none, right? But, like, if it's to get people to be endeared to him and be like I right. am, where I'm like, this poor kid's just screaming out for his mom, right? Like, that's probably
see,
exactly.
See, he manipulated you, Ben.
That's probably exactly
you
what
you
want to
be his best friend now, see?
Yeah.
I told you he was good. Oh my gosh. So that Easter Sunday morning, he left town. He was driving east in Sarah's car. Of course, he didn't want to get busted. So he rented another car and dropped off Sarah's car at a gas station. I guess he told the attendant it needed some kind of repair. So he drove for 18 hours, stopping only for gas and soda and Nodos. Do you remember that stuff?
Yeah.
From way back when. I don't even think they sell that anymore. I'm not sure.
No, I think they switched to 5-hour energy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But I remember no dose.
Yeah. Now, he was stopped in Colorado for speeding, but, you know, he's still had that quiet, unassuming appearance about him. So he paid his fine, moved on. Nothing happened there. You know, finally got exhausted. He stopped in Pueblo, Colorado. He placed a call to the Santa Cruz Police Department, where he knew several of the officers because, you know, he would drink with them at the jury room. And he began his marathon confession. You know, the initial contact required several calls because he had to convince Santa Cruz that he wasn't a crank caller. Then, you know, he had to help him find him. He was really disoriented and wasn't quite sure how to lead the police to the Pueblo phone booth from, you know, the one that he was placing the calls. And when he was taken into custody, a party of investigators from Santa Cruz actually headed for Pueblo, where they'd question him about the crimes, you know.
Yeah.
He was claiming responsibility for.
I think this guy's smart enough that he realizes, because I was thinking of it when we were first going over that portion. It's like, once you killed your mother, you're gonna get caught, right? Like, that's it, right? Like, that's the last killing you can really do, because that you can't hide. And
no,
your friend, right? because up until that point, he's not connected to any of the people he's killed, except the grandparents, but that's different.
Yeah, that was before, yeah. Now, they recorded all of his, the interviews that they did, and he, you know, gave incredibly explicit and very detailed confessions to all 8 murders. You know, upon his arrival to Santa Cruz, Ed led the investigators to the various disposal sites he used and continued his endless confession. Dude likes to talk. So when he was finally finished, he'd been so thorough that his court-appointed public defender, James Jackson, had absolutely no avenue for defense except that of insanity. You know, he had confessed thoroughly and explicitly and just, yeah, he was busted. A series of witnesses were brought in to try to establish that Ed was not responsible for his crimes, but the prosecutor undermined the testimony of each one. The prosecuting witness, Dr. Joel Fort, did the most damage to Ed's insanity defense. He'd spent quite a bit of time reviewing Ed's case. He actually went all the way back to his diagnoses after the killing of his grandparents and during his time at Atascadero. And he'd also interviewed Ed. He elicited previously unknown information about his sexual practices with the bodies and even some cannibalism. I don't know a lot about that because I haven't found any thing where he's actually talked about cannibalism.
Yeah, the only thing I thought was, like, earlier I wondered if he did cannibalism because you had said that one of his victims, they didn't really find any parts of the body. And in my mind, I was like, I wonder if he eats people. But that was the only...
Yeah. He may have taken a liking to that little, the Korean Iko. I don't know, because hers is the one that they, I don't think they found very many pieces ever, unfortunately. Now, this doctor said Ed was not a paranoid schizophrenic. He was obsessed with sex and violence. He craved attention. Actually, he went so far as to slash his own wrist a couple times with a ballpoint pen during trial. But he wasn't insane. And Fort said that if he was ever released, he would kill again and he would kill the same sort of victim, which makes sense because, you know, these victims were modeled, you know, they were substitutes for him killing his mom. So I would assume he would continue that pattern. I don't know.
Yeah.
Now, during the 3 weeks of the trial, no witness, not even Ed's sister or his doctors from Atascadero, were able to convince the jury that Ed was insane. They actually only deliberated for 5 hours. They found him guilty of first-degree murder on all 8 counts. After a short observation stint at Vacaville Medical Facility, he was sent to the maximum security prison at Folsom for the rest of his life. And I've got a little video of how he was caught and, you know, how he turned himself in. And so many interviews.
Do we know if, like they said, he was really out of it when he confessed? Like, was there any drug use or is it just his emotional state?
No, it was just
state?
Exhaustion.
Okay.
Because he'd been driving pretty much nonstop since the time he did it, you know.
They'd buy me a beer, I'd buy them a beer. Casual relationships, but that was, I was poking around a little bit trying to find some things out. I knew they wouldn't be privy to hot information, but there were some things that were bothering me, like were there any speculations on how they were dying.
Did the cops like you?
Like I said, a friendly nuisance. I got in the way, and it was deliberate. Again, friendly nuisances are dismissed.
How did you get the knowledge to outsmart the police?
Watching television. Believe it or not, Joseph Wambaugh, police story. Got some tremendous insights into not just the gimmicks, the actual things, the tidbits that he would pick up from their procedures, but the mechanics behind that, the logic behind it, was I would not allow myself to walk into even a potential trap of behavior. And one of those was talking about those crimes too much to people, initiating conversations about that.
There was a memorial service for 2 of the victims.
Yes.
Were you tempted to go?
Yes.
But?
I'd seen one too many episodes of one too many crime shows where that is one of the available resources for clues. Tracking down the attenders. One man taking pictures of the people there to eliminate as potential suspects.
Some police department. Now, they actually came to your house to pick up a handgun.
Sheriff's representatives. One of the detectives was upset because he heard I had a 44 Magnum pistol and was a convicted mental patient, and he came to take the gun away, and it was on he and his sergeant detective. They were staking out the wrong house. It was across the street, and I'm playing around with the car, standing next to the gun in the trunk. They come over and ask me about, excuse me, sir, do you know who lives in this house across the street here? Well, that house was 609 Harriet. He crossed back over to this side into 609 Ord, and they were looking for me and didn't even know that, see what I mean? Bad news. Well, at any rate, we walk into the house to have them ask my mother about this other house, and I'm saying, hey, which 609 are you looking for? And they said, are you Ed Kemper? Yes. And it goes on. And I needed to find out what they were looking for, the murder weapon, the 22 automatic, or the 44 Magnum, and I don't want to advertise that I've got a whole bunch of guns. So I made a comment to divine between the two. And I said, yes, quite a little gun, isn't it? And he retorted, 44 Magnum, I hope so. And I said, whew, okay, because that loaded 22 was under the front seat and guaranteed me an arrest right on the spot. And 44 was in the trunk. I forgot that. I took him in the house, we went into my bedroom, and the closet door's open, and I have a high-powered rifle with a scope on it.
You had some other stuff in the house too, yes?
Yeah. I had the personal effects and identification of the last two co-eds that had been murdered about 2 months before, right next to the guns in the closet, in a box.
Could he have seen it?
No, but when he arrested me for having all those guns and went through the rest of the closet looking to see if there were any pistols or anything else, he couldn't have helped notice a purse, a book bag, and co-ed ID inside of those belonging to their two latest murder victims. I'd back up and said, oh, excuse me. I just remembered, so, and instantly he responds to what I'm saying, my hand moves, back we go outside, and he's still thinking, boy, this is a really nice and helpful guy here.
Why did you wind up giving yourself up?
It had to stop. It had to stop. Once my mother was dead, there was almost a cathartic process at that point. I got physically ill right then, when she died, when I murdered her. And once she was dead, there was no way I could back out. I had backed down from giving up 1,000 times. You know, I used to get drunk and go sit out in front of the sheriff's department in a parking lot across the street on one of those little concrete parking berms, and I just sit there and say, no, I still can't. The clanging doors, I could still hear them. No, because it'll never open again. You know, so I rationalized that to give up would be insane. To give up would be crazy. I'd be giving away my freedom, and I don't need to. But I look back on that and wish I had earlier, when I was saying those things to myself. The people who were later dead wouldn't be. The regret that came later would have not had to be. Those people, not things, those people would still be with their families, with their loved ones. They would have their own families. If I had had the courage to make that decision, instead of painting myself into the corner.
Where might you be if you'd never given in to the impulse to murder?
Where might I be? If my parole had been successful, I believe I'd be married, I'd have children, I'd be heading toward my first grandchildren.
That's a scary
thought. So, yeah, so I have a question for you actually elicited by that one. He goes on to say, you know, like, that he wished he would have been caught earlier so less people would have died, people could have been a family. That gives you the almost the illusion of empathy. But mm-hmm. I think for him, more than that, it's just that he's smart enough to realize that socially, that's how he should feel. And yeah. So he is giving that to the listeners so that they're like, okay, this guy understands.
Mm-hmm.
But my question is this. Do you think that you can feel bad? Like, do you think he feels bad because he knows that he doesn't feel emotion, but he knows that he should? Like, do you think he can feel bad without empathy? Do you think he can bypass it because he's smart enough to bypass it?
I think he can. And I think, I honestly don't think he really necessarily wanted to kill those girls. I think he was just He had to do that in order to be able to end up being able to do what he really wanted to, which is kill his mom, you know,
Right.
get rid of her. I mean, I know there's a part of him that did want to kill them because that's any serial killer, they get that urge, that need, that,
Yeah,
you
the
know.
overwhelming compulsion.
Yeah. But I think there probably is a part of him that maybe didn't actually want them to, you know, looking back now, thinking about, oh, you know, they could have had their own families and, you know, I
Yeah.
deprived
I just don't think it's
their
an
family.
emotional response. I think it's a logical response.
Yeah,
But it has
yeah.
the same ends,
But
right?
he
Where he's
loves to
like, I
talk.
don't, right.
He
But
loves to hear
I don't think he's
himself
like,
talk.
right. I don't think he's like, I feel this extreme guilt and horror and this.
Yeah.
I think he's saying, I logically know that that's wrong, and I logically know I stole from these families.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just it, I don't know, it's crazy, you know. He's hard to figure out. Like, I mean, just the way he talks, you would think he's very, you would think he has some kind of empathy and whatever, but I think he's just, he knows well from what he studied in Atascadero, you know, what he learned there. I think he just knows how to emulate what emotion should be like.
Yeah.
I mean, that's my opinion. I don't know.
Yeah, it's almost like he has fake emotions that are just from like being intelligent enough to realize that this is how the rest of the world reacts. And so I can understand it,
Yeah.
but he doesn't have the look on his face like he feels it, right?
But I mean, again, that could just be his personality type because my brother's the same way.
Yeah.
You know, it's, and he's not a sociopath. I don't think he is, but I don't know, it's just weird. Now, he was found sane and guilty at his trial in 73. He actually requested the death penalty for his crimes, but capital punishment was suspended in California at the time, so he instead received 8 life sentences. He waived his right to a parole hearing several times and has said he is happy in prison. He's actually at the California Medical Facility in Vacaville, California now. I know he started out in Folsom for a while, but I guess the older he got, you know, his health kind of deteriorated. But, you know, since he was put away back in 73, you know, we're fascinated with all these serial killers. Now, Ed, he's always remained eager to speak about his crimes. He's done extensive interviews with Robert Ressler of the FBI, which were aimed at building the FBI's serial killer profiling program. In 1988, he participated, actually, along with John Wayne Gacy, in a satellite broadcast during which each killer discussed his crimes. You know, he was loquacious and explicit, and he seemed to have garnered quite a bit of psychological insight into the nature of his crimes. Now, in prison, he's well behaved, he's cooperative, he seems to take great pride in his status as the genius serial killer who aided in his own capture and conviction. There goes throwing back to the narcissism. He knows, as we know, that his release would lead to tragedy, and he's aware of. And, you know, pretty much resigned that he's not going anywhere. And he's fine with that, which,
Yeah.
you know, he has that insight and he doesn't, it sounds like he, that makes him sound like he doesn't want to kill, you know, like there's still that little something, spark of humanity or whatever you want to call it, that
Yeah.
knows he
I
shouldn't.
mean, if he had been locked up, like if he never got out after killing his grandparents, or at least had received the proper, I don't know if for someone like him there is proper rehabilitation, right? But I mean, all these women would be alive. It's really depressing.
Yeah, it kind of is. It really is.
And at this point, that was the 70s, right? Like they would have like children and grandchildren. I mean, like whole family lines
Which
don't exist because of this dude.
his mom is hugely responsible part of, you know, obviously
Yeah.
he plays some responsibility too, but his mom too. It's just, you know, it's just ridiculous the way things are, you know. Because, I mean, if he had a normal upbringing with lovely parents, I mean, you know, you still have the torture and killing of animals.
But do you? I mean, I feel like maybe if he wasn't being ping-ponged all around, that wouldn't have started.
Well, I don't, this started when he was younger, like before the ping ponging and stuff. But I mean, his mom was still, I think, kind of bad with him.
Yeah, I was
And
gonna
then they
say there's no way he
divorced.
had like a good environment though for the I mean I could be wrong. I've gotta look up all the cases, but I don't think there's like known cases where people mutilated animals. that like they had a great parents and everything's going good. But I could be
Well,
wrong.
yeah, well, I mean, Dahmer.
Well, they say it, but I don't know if I believe it. You
Yeah,
know?
I mean, something happened to Dahmer. You know, there
Yeah.
was something
I
happened to him
mean,
that nobody's confessing to.
yeah, I just I find I don't want to I don't want to believe the way you don't want to think, and I know you believe in it, but you don't want to think every haunting in a paranormal case is a demon. I don't want to believe that you can be like a Michael Myers where you're just born evil.
Well, I can understand that. And, but who's to say psychopathy is evil? Because, I mean, we've talked about it multiple times. Not every psychopath grows up to be murderous. They're just,
Right.
you know, lacking of, honestly, I don't really know the difference between psychopathy and sociopathy. I mean, they all kind of seem, they just seem to go hand in hand. Like, psychopathy is leaning more towards murderous people. That's the only thing I can think of difference wise. I mean, have you really got into that in your studies yet?
I mean, they do go hand in hand because if you are a sociopath and you don't care about other human beings, it's much easier to take their life, right? So
Yeah.
they have to be tied directly together. I don't think you can be a psychopath without being a sociopath.
Well, and that's one thing that he talked about in one of his interviews too. He's like, you know, they're people, they're not things, they're people. And that's when he was talking
Right.
about
But
being the Brett part
he
of it.
said it like in a weird way that we wouldn't phrase things, almost like he was convincing himself. Like he has to remember that they're human beings, they're not objects. Like, no, if you really feel that, you don't have to say it. You'd be like, oh my God, I feel so bad for destroying their families and this and that. And then we get the fact that you know that they're not objects. But he had to literally say in a sentence, which is awkward and weird and robotic, because they're people, they are not things. Like
You know,
his counselor said it enough times he used it, right?
maybe he really does want to be that person who does feel bad about what he did,
Yeah,
and he
that's
just
why I
can't
say,
get
like
there
it's almost like
fully.
he logically talks them as like he's bypassed emotion where he uses he knows he's supposed to feel that and he wants to be normal, but he knows he's not.
I tell you what, he sure as hell sounds just like a normal guy I would sit and have a conversation with. I've got three more videos to play. And this is an interview that was done 1992. He was mid-40s, I think, mid to late 40s, I think. And just, I don't know. He just, I would have no problem sitting down and have a conversation with this guy. Hopefully with guards around, though.
I don't have any problem with that now. I understand the problems involved. I had to do a whole interview over once because the lady wouldn't check her audio tape recorder. I kept saying, you better check it and make sure it works first. Oh, I'm sure it works. It works. 2 hours later, we're doing it all over again. She was ready to cry, I'm telling you. I guess I could have, but that was the where I the pen was mightier than the sword, right? The only interview I did back at the time of my case. This is just a little anecdote for you here, but I went through the whole investigation, the whole trial, no interviews with the media, right? And then this one woman who had treated me pretty fairly in the media, she was in this drove or driven toward beating me with the newspapers. She tried to do a more in-depth piece around it, and so I did an interview with her before I went to prison. It was the day I was sentenced, and I was waiting for the bus or the car to prison here. And I actually, wait a minute, excuse me. That was where I gave her the interview. Okay, I talked to her just briefly. She came. She was hovering around. I was at the jury room to the courthouse talking to my lawyer. He hadn't shown up yet. She was up there talking to the officer that was with me. And we all just had a, I said, my officer or my lawyer does not want me talking to the media at all. So quick, I see him coming way down the hall. I said, let's set up a little scenario and act like I'm giving this really incriminating interview that screws everything up, right? And she kind of laughed because it was breaking the tension in the room, you know. So we set up this little scenario and she's busily acting like she's writing and I'm talking about all of this harebrained stuff that relates to the case and feelings, and he just starts turning bright red as he gets within hearing range. He's like a big clown, got this huge forehead, hair standing out all over, and now he turns bright red. And he says, "Matter in a wet hand." And he stomps into the room and slams his briefcase on the desk, and we all start laughing. And he gets really mad now. I said, what are you laughing about? I said, this is a setup just for you. I said, I'm not doing any interviews. But later on, I gave her an interview because she'd treated me so fairly up to that point, and also had she gave me a pen that day. It was a cast aluminum ballpoint pen. And I took it back to my high security jail cell up in Redwood City. I was really slammed down tight. I'm in a two-man cell by myself. They have a camera on me 24 hours a day, a monitor, videotape monitor. The lights are on. It's two sets of these four-footers here. And it's as bright as day, long, all night long, you know, 24 hours a day. And I was there for 5 months. And I brought this pen back in. I smuggled it in with me. And I get strip shook leaving the cell. I get strip shook coming back in. And I brought this pen in, and it got in with my legal papers. And a few months later, in the middle of the trial, I smashed the pen on the floor with my boot, sharpened it, got a sharp edge on the metal, and slashed my wrist, and was bleeding all over the place. And it was very messy and very exciting, and everybody was dragging me off to the hospital, get sewed up and all of that. And I got maced, shot up with industrial strength bottle of mace. They had about a quart of it, and they just gassed me with that whole thing, and dragged me off to the hospital. And I made a quippy comment. I don't think the police translated it properly for the media because they missed it. They'd love, you know how they love to get into puns on broadcast television. They love these little verbal puns and plays with words. And the pen is mightier than the sword. I turned the pen into a sword and cut myself. Both times I attempted suicide, I did it with a pen or parts of a pen. And I thought that was kind of interesting, but the media never picked up on that. They were too busy being serious.
Let's talk about that for just a second. Dude, on the day he is fucking sentenced to life in prison, he is playing jokes on his lawyer.
Yeah. I mean, he's a card. And then, like, he's right? Like multiple times on the pen is mightier than sword because I tried to kill myself with this pen. I made it into it's like, and he's like, but the media didn't pick up on it. But I thought it was funny. It's like, yeah, people don't think like you, sir. Number one. And number two, the pen is not mightier than sword because you survived both of those attempts, right? Like, so they didn't work. But the first thing I thought is, who is this person that, like, doesn't realize you shouldn't give this maximum security prisoner a fucking pen with a metal edge?
I don't... Maybe she was a newbie reporter. I don't know.
I mean, it's crazy though, right?
She probably didn't think about it.
She hasn't watched enough true crime because all they do all day in prison, if you watch this shit, is make shivs or buy shivs off of someone who does, right? A pen
right,
is,
yeah.
Like, amazing, right? They all wish they had a pen.
Yeah, yeah, that would have been toothbrushes. Perfect, yeah. I've got another one here to play.
Several or seven?
No, several.
Several types.
Would you care to explain us what types of different serial killers?
To be honest with you, I couldn't really tell you. Because the categorization process, as you know, is back east with the behavioral sciences unit. When I was locked up originally, they called it mass murderer. Anybody who killed more than two or three people was a mass murderer. And whether it was all at one place or over an extended period of time. And then in the early 80s, they came up with this differentiation called serial killing, which was living two lives, basically. If one orients to the negative side of that living, he would say this person was living a cover life that was wrapped around doing those crimes, and which couldn't be very realistic. Someone doesn't live their life to murder people. Their life was not set for that from birth. From my point of view, what I saw was there was a great hole in my life. There was a lot missing from my life, and it didn't necessarily mean feelings. It meant I had walled off this emptiness of my life, okay? I had an upbringing that was some have called dysfunctional, okay? Parents divorced when I was young. My mother started drinking heavily. She was working to raise three kids. We were not being cooperative about it. She drank more. She punished us harder. probably out of desperation. Character sets were being developed at that point. Rather than me going to Boy Scouts and getting achievement badges, I was not going to Boy Scouts and not getting achievement badges. I was finding devious ways to get around the rules of the home. Because the whole home life, just I watched it deteriorate from what typical kids on the block were doing to coming home from school that I didn't like anyway. And ironically, I have a high IQ. I didn't know that till I was locked up the first time for murder. I always thought I was a little missing up here, a little short. Because I was always called stupid, I'm called slow, don't you think when you do things? That was the problem. I wasn't thinking when I did things. I just did by rote, I did by memory, I did by example. And I had absolutely no faith in myself at all. I had no interaction going on in my own mind. I was not a thinker. I was not an individual. I had a teacher in the ninth grade who changed all that. He made me think. He would not tolerate my not thinking. He was an art teacher. And it was a devastating experience for me because there were gears in my head that were just rusty and they were barely moving or not at all. And that's when I found out that's what the state of my mind's functioning was. I didn't think. To the point of he points at a stapler on his desk and says, "What does that say?" And I looked at it and I said, "Silver line." He says, "Look again." And he's raving at me. And I look and it said swing line. All I had to do was look at it and read it. But I glanced at it and threw it back at him out of panic. So he made me think, and he gave me puzzles to work out in school, in my class, where I had to resolve these to continue on with the class. I had to think. I had to use abstracts. And after that started, that became fascinating to me, so I got more and more involved in thinking and about my surroundings and things like that. But by then, I was locked up.
But what was your relationship with your sister?
Which one? I have two.
Yes, the one you were playing strange games of death with her, with one
my
of
younger
your sisters.
Sister, yeah. My older sister was 5 years older than me, so she was off with her friends and in a distant relationship. My younger sister's 2 years younger, and I developed some morbid games. My life had started going that way at about eight. We lived in a house where there was a basement. Some people think there was a trap door on that basement. That's not so. That was a different house. It was a walk-in basement, but it was in Montana. It was a full basement. It had granite walls, hewn wood floorboards, and it looked like some old dungeon out of a castle or something. I was 8 years old, seven and a half, 8 years old, and then I was very susceptible. My imagination was very livid. And there was an old furnace in the basement that had been converted from burning coal to burning and coal and wood to burning gas, and that was it. Had a central heating system with your typical radiators. And if you've ever lived in a home like that, you know the binging, the clang, the pop, the rattles, the weird sounds in the night that can be spooky to a kid. Well, at a certain time of the evening, the family left the center room, the living room of the house. My mother and my sisters, or my sisters themselves, would go up to bed upstairs, where I used to go to bed, upstairs. I had to go down to the basement. And an eight-year-old child had a tough time differentiating the reason in that. Why am I going to the basement? I'm going to hell, they're going to heaven. Earth is the living room. I'm going down to deal with demons and monsters and ghosts and all the things that scare me. They don't have to. There's a house with three women and one male, one boy, me. And I got a little defensive. I'm saying, gee, this is kind of ganging up. My older sister had a basement bedroom, okay? And it was a storage room that was about 18 feet wide and 35 feet long, okay? And it was a concrete room, no windows. And it had a light bulb over a big industrial iron sink, you know, like a laundry sink, and had a pull string on the light. The bed was in the opposite corner of the room. It was a double bed, not a single bed. And I had a dresser halfway. I had a couple of carpets thrown on the floor, old carpets, and there's a lot of storage stuff along the wall. And I was there about 6 months in that room. And I developed some very, very particular and articulate rituals that I felt I had to go through to protect myself. I was like, again, it's embarrassing. I was a youngster, and if you can imagine me going down a staircase of rough-hewn wood, there's no guardrail. So one step wrong and you're off into this black pit. I turn on the light, it's a little circular light switch, and a single naked bulb goes on down at the bottom of these stairs, okay? So I turn that light on, I open the door, I close the door because my mother complains of the cold coming in from the basement. I go down the stairs, I get to the bottom, I do a 180 degree turn, and I walk the full length of the house on this floor with these pipes rattling and wheezing and banging over my head. It's pitch black ahead of me, and the only light is behind me hanging down from the ceiling. I'm now cut off from the house, cut off from them. I walk this full length into the darkness, from this gradient of light into complete darkness, groping around in the dark. I do about a 45 degree angle when I get to the end, and I pull the string and it lights up this end. And then I'm supposed to walk all the way back to the other end, turn that light off, and now walk toward the light from the dark. And I've got this horrible terror going on inside of me. And this is every night. This is every day, because it's pitch black down there, no windows. She didn't intend all of this. And when I sniveled about it, when I complained and I cried about it, I got smacked in the head. You know, what's the matter with you? Quit being such a wimp. And she, you know, she was trying to solve a problem. She had not enough room upstairs to where I didn't have to share a bedroom with a sister. I'm 8 years old. I need to go to the basement.
And what were those morbid games that you played with your sister?
Okay. Well, the one I remember someone talking about in a book was one that was playing gas chamber or electric chair or something. And we had this big old overstuffed chair up in my room. And it was not just my sister and I, it was my sister and I and a friend, a close friend. We got into all these games. We got into one game where we'd roll up in a rug, and a person who would try to get out of it is just like a large throw rug. And it was, I guess, what fascinated us individually about it is it was a completely, it broke up the monotony, I guess, of what we were doing. Didn't have a lot of toys to play with. We got bored with those pretty quickly. So we looked for things to do. You roll up in the rug and you try to get out, and the other two would leave the room, and we see who could get out fastest. You know, you try to work your way out sideways or scoot out the end of it or whatever. And it went from that to being tied in this overstuffed chair with a cord or something, or pieces of sheet or sash or something. And it went through this process. I guess that's back in 1960 when Carol Chessman was executed down in California. We're up in Montana. And so I got, there's a lot of media coverage on that because he was an author, he'd written books, they're trying to save his life, he'd not killed anybody, why are they executing him? And so that's, I think, where the fascination with that came in, that gas chamber effect. But, and I think it overly fascinated some people in relation to this case because it seemed so obvious a piece, you know. I'm preparing my mindset for doing deathly kind of things.
Another.
See how easy it is just to talk to?
Mm-hmm.
He loves
it. Like, he can say crazy shit too, and like he just seems chill. Like it doesn't.
Yeah, it's just like, no big deal, you know? Okay, well, that makes sense. Yeah, it's. Do you see why I say he's my favorite serial killer?
No, that part I still don't get. I can see, like I said, I can see why you could be like, he's the most fascinating. He's the one that I am the most interested in. But favorite
it's
is
the
just
same
not...
thing. You're using semantics right now. It's all semantics.
I mean, I guess if I have to have a favorite, Jack the Ripper is my favorite serial killer.
Yeah.
But what I really mean by that is that case intrigues me more than any case.
Well, how do you know that's not what I mean?
Well, I think you should phrase it better. Be like, I really love Ed Kemper.
Oh my god! You know what? I'm not kidding. I would go to his medical facility and sit down and have a conversation with him if I could.
You see, really, he's so dangerous, though. I mean, literally, well, yeah. Nothing about like the fact that you want to go talk to him. Yeah, I mean, I could see that too because I have no fear when this dude's talking.
Yeah,
but all these women should have had fear.
Yeah, especially because I'm sure his hand could probably just like crush my whole skull.
Yeah.
Just with one blow.
He's talking about playing electric chair with his little sister, and it's like, it just sounds like some dude just talking about his childhood. And like, the first thing you gotta think to yourself, is that normal? Do you know other people who played electric chair when they were little? No.
Actually,
you did. Oh, you, no
No,
wonder you
no,
love this.
no, no.
You're
Wait
a
a minute.
crazy
No,
psycho.
this is in my 20s, actually. Dave and Buster's, they had this chair called Shocker. And you would sit in it, and it's got two of these metal things that you hold onto with your hands on both sides.
Yeah.
And the trick is you have to squeeze them really tight and not let go, because it's simulating, I guess, being electrocuted, but obviously not for real. But it sends these vibrations through these metal handles that you're holding on to, and the longer you hold on, the harder the vibrations get. And it actually at the very end gets to where it does kind of hurt. But
Yeah.
I just want you to know, I always won. I never let
Yeah, and
go.
it like I was it, at first it seemed weird that Dave and Buster's would have something, and then what am I talking about? Like, look at the society of America and the world. I mean, you
Yeah.
got bullfights where we're like killing animals in front of
Oh, I hate
people.
that. That's
You, people have
horrible.
watched public executions all over the world for a long, long time.
You
People are
know,
fascinated with this shit. So for
I'm
them to have a fake electric chair for kids, even though it's insane, kind of makes sense here in America.
You know what? I made the mistake of when I was in college of getting on the internet and watching Al Qaeda behead
Oh,
one
the
of the
beheading thing, I
American.
never watched that video, but I remember when it was out because I like was like, I can't watch it. You know me, I can't, that would no.
I was traumatized for a long time after watching that, and I still, it really, like, it doesn't bother me the way it did back then, but it bothered me for a long time. I mean, I couldn't get it out of my head. Like,
I
that's
feel
actually
this.
one thing I wish I had never watched.
Yeah, I purposely didn't because I'm so squeamish and stuff, and it's like,
Oh, you would have been in therapy for the rest of your life if you'd
yeah.
watched it. Because I mean, it was, and there were several that you could pick to choose from. I got he wasn't a soldier, he was a civilian contractor. And
Yeah.
I can still picture just in detail in my mind exact. I mean, because it was,
It's horrific, and it's like it's
they don't
amazing
use a
that.
sword, okay? They use a knife
Ugh.
that's like
How
maybe
did the
this
government
long.
allow that to not like why wasn't that taken immediately off the internet?
Maybe freedom of press. I don't know. I don't know.
It just seems like for the
I don't
family's
know that
sake
it's up
that
any longer,
yeah, I
but
doubt it.
when I was with American, I was like, I did all the GSC training and everything, right? But I'm actually friends with some of the TSA investigators who, well, at the airport we worked at. And I don't know if you were still there. Do you remember me showing you guys the magazine of like a printout of what's online for these terrorists? Like, they actually have their own like
Oh,
publication. Do you remember? Because I
yes,
had
I
to
do
keep it under
remember
lock
that
and
now.
key.
I do remember that. They had their own publication, like, which was basically mostly propaganda trying to lure more people into it, right? Yeah, I remember that.
And they had American Airlines planes on the one that my TSA friend actually printed out for me. And this is something like, okay, so don't, listeners, if you're listening to this now, do not go to Google or whatever search engine you use and type in anything that has to do with terrorist publications, because you will get a knock on your door by the FBI, and I'm not kidding. They flag those like crazy. Like, I wasn't even allowed to, I couldn't type it up and pull it up to get this publication. I had to go through the head TSA inspector, and they, fortunately, because I had a very good working relationship with them while I was there, they printed out one copy and allowed me to show it to my ground security coordinator class that I was teaching. And it's intense. And I had to give it back to them after the class was done. Like, I wasn't even allowed to keep it. It's that they take it very seriously. So do not Google it, because you will be in some kind of FBI station and be questioned as to what the hell you're doing looking up shit like that. And it's, I mean, it's like you said, it's a lot of propaganda, and it was very disturbing. But yeah, that
Yeah, it showed you how to make bombs and stuff too, right?
I can't remember. Honestly, the only thing I remember from what he printed out for me was it had an American Airlines airplane on it.
Yeah. I remember it having pages about how to make simple bombs, and basically the propaganda wasn't like, "Hey, join Al Qaeda and fly out here and we'll train you." It was teaching people how to do it right where they're at so they could try to make havoc all over the world.
I mean, it's It was pretty intense, you know, and it's. I almost wish I still had that copy just to look at it some more, but I can't, you know. Obviously, I wasn't allowed to keep it. Not
Yeah,
because I
it's
want to be a
probably for the
terrorist. It has
best. I
nothing to
think
do
we've
with it.
said
It's just.
enough. I think the FBI might be knocking soon anyways.
No, I mean, I didn't keep it. I'm not interested in becoming a terrorist. I don't care about any of that
No,
stuff. I don't even know how we got it. Oh, because we were talking about beheadings. That's how we got on the subject. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty intense, the shit that, you know, is out there on the internet. I mean, I don't know that
it's crazy.
that they can legally censor it if it's American.
I feel like
I
that
don't
stuff,
know.
like
I
I said,
mean,
I agree with you when you said you don't know if that video is still on the internet. I don't think it is. I think it probably did get taken down, but I think that like it was on longer than I think it should have been. I think that the regulations that would have taken something like that down came after that because
yeah,
that
because I
stuff
mean,
didn't exist then, right?
this one, I don't think this is, this may have been a year or two after 9/11. It wasn't very long after it because I
Yeah.
was still pretty young.
It might have been, yeah, I was gonna say during it. I don't mean during that day. I mean, it was during that whole, it was definitely during that whole
It could have been even
everyone's
within
still
that same
afraid and
year. I don't know. I can't.
right. I think it was.
I know that I was young. And it really had a bad effect on me. I mean, I was, it actually made me ill a little bit, which is unusual because I usually am the one who likes the morbid stuff, but this was, I
Yeah.
couldn't.
I mean, I remember it because I was traumatized by it without seeing it. So I
Oh,
can't
it was,
imagine how
yeah.
you feel having seen it.
No, it's, I mean, still to this day, I can remember and just the brutality of it, because this guy is fully awake, fully aware of the shit that's going on, and
Yeah.
explicit
Because I didn't
content
watch
coming out of
it,
my
but
mouth now,
I
but
still can see in my head him on his knees in front of them. And I doesn't he like read like his like or talks he talks to his family,
the
or is it
video that I
just
looked at, he didn't talk to nobody about
okay.
nothing. Like,
I mean,
they
I
put
think,
him on
like you
his
said, there were
knees.
several.
They held his head in his hand,
Yeah.
and they were the knife, like this long, sawing, not chopping or anything, sawing his neck. And they had to
Yeah.
go through bone while this guy's alive. It was, oh, I, that's one thing I wish I had never ever clicked on. I don't advise it at all.
No. But
Nothing is
apparently, in
worth
a
that.
temper, he had a. No issues doing that.
Yeah, but
'Cause you gotta
he
think.
must have used a knife too. So I mean, he
Right,
would,
that's what I was
wow,
gonna
but they
say.
were
You gotta
dead though,
think he
at least.
probably isn't like using an axe inside his
No.
apartment, right? Like he
Straight up knife,
probably
yeah.
did what they did.
Oh God. Yeah. Well, I
And
mean,
it's
good thing for them is that they were dead at least.
yeah.
You
You
know.
know, I was gonna say, like I get that it's part of the escalation, it's part of the compulsion, it's part of the addiction. But like the whole like we were talking about it earlier, like the cutting up people, I don't get it because it's like how much more DNA are you spreading everywhere? How much more of a mess are you making? Like, this isn't helping you.
Well, if they're dead, you're not going to have a lot of the, there's not going to be the
Well,
blood
depending on how
splatter,
long
you
they've been
know?
dead, right? Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I mean, you know, this blood's still going to come out, obviously, but it's not going to be splattering. So it's,
Yeah. It just,
I would
I get that it's
assume.
harder to get rid of a full body, but it
Yeah.
seems a lot cleaner.
Yeah. Well, the one of the one, one of the last ones he did in his mom's house, he put her in the bathtub, which, you know, if that's the way, if you want to dismember somebody, that's the way I would do it, in the bathtub, so you can
So he
really
was like
rinse them
running
out.
water while cutting.
I don't know if he's running water, but I know he mopped everything up, and you know
Yeah.
they're dead, so you, again, you don't have to deal with the arterial spurge or anything like that. But yeah, it's, there's got to be some depravity in there, you know. There's got to be
Yeah.
something. I don't know. He's fascinating case,
He
fascinating case.
is. I like how in the video he said he was talking about a void, right? And he said, and it's not necessarily emotion.
Yeah.
Again, that's not how people phrase shit. They'd be like, look, I have emotions, right? Like, he's like, it's not necessarily emotion that I'm lacking. It's like, not necessarily means, yes, it is.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's, yeah, I am. Oh, Ed. Oh, good old Ed.
All right, guys, thank you very much. That will be the wrap-up for our Ed Kemper two-part episode. We appreciate you guys joining us again, as always. I'm Ben.
And I'm Mandy. And of course, if you want to get in touch with us, all of our social media links are conveniently located in one spot at www.throughtheabysspodcast.com. Bye-bye. Well, Ben, we got another episode under our belts. Thanks so much for tuning in to Through the Abyss podcast. And until next time, keep it weird.
Spooky stuff!